and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, we like our fighters here at the Stephanie Miller Show. Michael Moore, like that headline. Democratic senators get on board with health care, prepare to lose your seat. Ha ha! What? Oh, Michael Moore will be on the program tomorrow in hour number two to talk more about that.
That's right.
Howard Dean, also on TV with Fightin' Words. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. I need an ally in the trenches with me, someone already on board with healthcare, Representative Ron Kind of the great state of Wisconsin. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So, obviously, yesterday, a big day. I've seen this talked about many different ways, what happened in the Senate Finance Committee. I know you're in the House, but obviously this is all going to have to come together at some point. So Chuck Schumer did not really seem, I don't think, first of all, this was a surprise that the public option didn't make it yesterday in the Senate Finance Committee, right?
You know, this is sausage being made, Stephanie, and I'm really surprised when I go back home to Wisconsin how closely the American people are following the process. But, you know, outside of a war resolution, this is as tough as it gets for Congress trying to reform a health care system in desperate need of reform. You're seeing that now with the markup at the Finance Committee. We've been struggling with it on the House side for the past, you know, 9-10 months of this year. And the ultimate goal, how do we reduce costs, make health care affordable to every American? That's the objective and goal. Obviously, you're going to get some differences of opinion on how best to achieve that.
Yep. Well, I mean, here's the thing that I love. We were reading, I think, a Paul Begala piece yesterday on how, you know, this right-wing noise machine has just not worked. And I think that's good news. There's another poll out today, the Kaiser Family Foundation, I think, shows almost 60% of Americans want to reform health care. So I think that's the good news, is a lot of this screaming is not resonating with the American people.
I think it really speaks to the fact that the American people know what the gig is. Mm-hmm. And the gig is ever-rising health insurance expenses that they're facing, more people losing coverage with the economy that we have. And no matter how much misinformation, mischaracterization, fear you try to spread out there, people understand what the status quo will bring. It means higher prices, getting less, bankrupting ourselves in the long run. So clearly there's recognition we have to do something, and now trying to gobble that together and develop consensus so you have majorities, a supermajority in the Senate, which is the new rule, apparently.
Well,
it's really hard.
And Congressman Kind, I know that Senator Harkin yesterday, who obviously took over for Ted Kennedy on the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, he says we do have the votes to pass a bill with a public option in the Senate.
You know, I've been supportive of a public option. I think a public option can work. You can have it compete on a level playing field with the same requirements as private insurance plans, no federal subsidies to prop it up. But here's the bottom line for me, Stephanie, is whether you agree philosophically in the need of a public option, there are a lot of people in Wisconsin and throughout the nation that would at least like that choice in this national exchange that we're trying to create of choosing a public option so everyone isn't forced into the arms of private health insurance companies.
Well,
and that's very difficult to argue against, allowing the American people a choice, because, and this is the fundamental fact, no one will be forced to go into a public option that doesn't want to be there. And as much as the Republicans want to decry this big government takeover, nothing could be further from the truth.
Congressman, we sometimes get whether it's emailers or callers, because, as you say, I mean, this can be complicated between, you know, the bills going through the House and the one in the Senate Finance and the other one in the Senate. We get that question a lot. Will the public option, well, again, we don't have one final bill, but in what's happening now, who has access to the public? Can anyone choose the public option? Because some people have said, well, if I can't choose it anyway, well, how does it help me? Can you explain that?
The public option would be one of many health plans that people could choose from in this national exchange that we're trying to create. And this is in response to the fact that the small group market has failed small businesses, farmers, individuals throughout the country. I mean, it's just too expensive for them to go out on their own, shop for health insurance that they can afford. So establishing this national exchange with a menu of health plan options, public option being one of those that they can choose from, with complete transparency so you know what you're getting and how much you're paying
for. But, Congressman, can anyone choose it, is what I'm saying? Like, let's say you get health insurance through your company.
Right.
Can you choose the public option, or would your company have to choose the public option?
Not initially. If your company is offering a health insurance plan, you have to sign up for that unless you reach a minimum threshold of expense. If it's too costly based on what you earn, then you're allowed to go into the national exchange. Then you can choose a public option or any of the other plans that are in that national exchange. But initially, the company's offering you a plan that's affordable. That's what you have to take. So again, it belies this argument that Republicans keep making that everyone will just be forced or rushed into a public option plan.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to build on what exists in the system right now, and it's by and large employer-sponsored health plan. But even those plans are becoming cost prohibitive for some of the workers at those companies. And if that's the case, they can go into the exchange then.
Congressman, you know, again, not only does the public option bring down the cost of the bill, but, you know, for instance, the Stephanie Miller Show is a small business. I mean, I would like the opportunity to buy, you know, have a public option that is less expensive for my business as a whole, because obviously that's only going to help everybody's bottom line.
You know, it's interesting. Last week we had the CEO of the Small Business Majority. It is a coalition that represents small businesses throughout the country. And they just went in the field and did a survey. And over 65% of the small business owners in their organization, and we're talking thousands of these small businesses around the country, would like that choice of a public option because they understand there's a real lack of competition in the private health insurance market right now with the consolidation of market share with some of these large insurance companies, and therefore there is no real competition. A public option would bring that into play.
Well, Congressman, that's what, you know, Governor Dean said yesterday, which I totally agree with, and I've heard this a lot, is, you know, he said this bill, you know, in the Senate Finance Committee is a terrible mistake that George W. Bush would have loved, because it's a massive giveaway of taxpayer money to the health insurance industry. I mean, it really is. It herds all these new people into the system without anything to increase competition, right?
Well, not only we need more competition, but we also have to change the way healthcare is delivered in this country and how we pay for healthcare. Studies show we're spending over $700 billion a year on tests and imaging, care and procedures that don't work, that don't help the patient, in too many instances make patients worse off rather than better off. And it's because the current payment system, this fee-for-service system, is based on the volume of care given as opposed to the value or the quality of care. And that's something that I and others are trying to change in the context of health care reform so that reimbursements would flow to the quality or the outcome of care that's given so you don't have the excessive treatment and tests being ordered, because right now that's where the money flows. And
mm-hmm.
unless we change that, if we're going to put another 70 million more Americans in the Medicare system as it exists, we won't be able to sustain it. We will bankrupt ourselves as a nation. So as important as the public option is in health care reform, I think it's even more important that we change the way healthcare is delivered and how we pay for it, or we're not going to be able to afford anything at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, keep fighting the good fight, because I think, you know, I don't know how you do it in it's just the climate, whether it's a Joe Wilson yelling at the president. I think you probably saw your colleague, Representative Trent Franks of Arizona, called the president an enemy of humanity yesterday and was caught on tape. I mean, how do you have a discussion with these people that, you know, to me are not even reaching a basic level of decency?
Yeah, you know, some clearly aren't interested in playing a constructive role. They're just trying to find ways to derail it and just say no and not offering any practical alternatives. That is just not an option for our nation. I mean, health care reform, as important as that is, transcends any one individual, including the president, and any one party. It is a challenge we all share as Americans, and it's going to require a unique American solution to find an answer. And if they want to play that game, I think the American people, by and large, understand what they're trying to do. But they really hope that we can come together with a package that makes sense, that's going to reduce the cost for them and being able to afford health care coverage, because everyone gets that. They understand that the system we have now is unsustainable and it's going to lead to disaster unless we make an honest effort.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank God we got you in the trenches. Representative Ron Kind of the great state of Wisconsin, thanks so much, Congressman.
My pleasure.
All right, there
we
go.
I like him a lot.
A big day. We have House Majority Whip James Clyburn coming up on the Newsmaker Hotline in just a few minutes. Carl Frisch from Media Matters for America will join us to co-host Right Wing World next hour. And then it's Hump Days with Hal.
Are you going to hump him this time?
Oh, shush. In hour number three.
Yeah.
You're breaking dramatic tension. We'll wait and see, won't we?
Okay. Teasy McTeaserson.
All right.
And I have this for for James Clyburn.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, and the breaking news this morning, as usual, Jim, Chris Lavoie on it.
Oh, jeez.
He has written on my show notes here, the U.S. is speeding up its military withdrawal from Iran. Apparently, we've already invaded Iran, and we're withdrawing.
I missed that.
Yesterday, as you know, he had written for me that they had tested a missile that was able to reach Iran.
From Iran.
Which is kind of a post-ironic missile launch.
But we're ready to pull out of Iran now. I was not aware that we invaded.
All right, I'm leaving.
Wow.
Bye.
Bye.
That is big news.
Oh, apparently it's Iraq. You know how he is with us. He meant Israel. The missile couldn't reach Israel, and this is it. So we're speeding up our military withdrawal from Iraq.
Well, the end and the Q are really close.
Which is good news. It was my birthday yesterday, and I went out drinking with the guy that owns the show that's trying to kill me for the life insurance money, but I missed a lot. I missed an invasion of Iran, and now we're withdrawing already?
Wow.
We win!
I'm not producing for you!
Not talking to you. Call me. All right, let's check some news we don't want to lose, shall we? Here we go, kids.
Yippee. It's time for stand-up news. And now, here's anchor person, Stephanie Miller.
I guess we invaded Iran because we felt sorry for them because they bombed themselves. So we thought maybe we'd go and help or something.
I hate you all.
It's all right. It's not like it's that important. Just a little mistake. All right.
George Bush invaded the wrong country, for example. Just a little...
Exactly.
I have something in common with George Bush. Hooray.
At least Chris just makes typos, and we don't actually invade the wrong country.
You know what, though? I did fix it on the front page of the website. So, yeah, because I, yeah.
Mm. Oh, boy, you're having a bad patch. That's okay, Skippy. Hang in there.
I'm trying.
RNC Chairman Michael Steele, of course, criticized President Obama for going to Copenhagen. Why? Because he hates America. Not the president, Michael Steele.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To pitch Chicago as the site of the 2016 Olympics, Steele said, at a time of war, at a time of recession, Obama's short trip would distract him from focusing on pressing problems.
Hmm. All 18 hours.
Steele tried to argue the country could not move forward with Obama in Copenhagen. Because, as Jim said, there's no payphones, I guess, there.
Yeah,
so he can't. He'll be completely disconnected from the world in every
way. You can communicate from the plane, either.
No. It's not set up for that. You know, they make them fly Southwest. I don't know if you know that.
Just throw a bag of peanuts at him. Here, take it. You're going to like it.
Not even any of those airphones. Nothing.
In New Brunswick and then Greenland and then...
He said Obama should tell the public if he wants the country to make the Olympics the priority as his job creation program. Yeah, I think that's what the president said, is that's his whole...
that's his whole gig now. Yeah,
thing.
Getting the Olympics
a
here.
A Baltimore Sun reporter said to Steele, so are you saying it's a mistake for him to go to Copenhagen? Steele tried to dodge the question and eventually tersely cut off the reporter when he tried to follow up.
Yeah.
The reporter said, okay, I'm still not clear. Is it a mistake in your eyes? Steele, my eyes don't... What do you mean, my eyes?
Huh? Well, it's a figure of speech, dude.
You are an idiot.
Well, you said a mistake is in the eyes of the beholder. I'm wondering if you think it's a mistake. And Steele said, I gave you my answer, Paul.
Oh, he got testy.
My. Yes, according to Steele, Obama's spending 18 hours to promote an event that has the opportunity to increase U.S. prestige, generate $22.5 billion in economic activity, and the equivalent of 315,000 new full-time jobs. Must mean he has completely abandoned his entire policy agenda. Whew. All right, we have our Michael Steele.
I can't believe that at a time of war and recession, the president is going to Copenhagen. I mean, if he was jonesing for some smørrebrød with medisterpils and frikadella, he could have gone to Solvang. I mean, if he wanted lingonberry pancakes, he could have gone to any IHOP right here in the United States. But no, he had to go to a socialist country with socialized medicine and free college education for everybody, which is what they do in scary socialist countries like Denmark, which is, of course, right next to Germany, with its Nazi death panels, which just goes to prove that Obama is a Danish socialist commie Nazi from Kenya who wants to destroy this country from within. From without, by going outside the country for an entire 18 hours when he could be back home working to turn the country into a Nazi commie Danish gulag with FEMA death camps where they make you assemble Danish IKEA furniture without even getting to sample the meatballs with lingonberries.
Huh?
So, the president's trip to Copenhagen was a mistake in your eyes? There's steak in my eyes? What about my eyes? Who said anything about my eyes? What are they, bloodshot? What are you getting at?
You're high, aren't you?
Yes! I've been smoking a gigantic blunt all morning. What's your point? Seriously, is there steak in my eyes? Because I'm hungry. I would eat my own eyeballs right now if there's lingonberry syrup on them.
Oh.
Hey, who wants pancakes? I gave you my answer, Paul. No more questions.
He's high. That's why.
Allegedly.
Yes, I am.
Allegedly.
He's high as a kite all the time.
That's all for Stand Up News Part 1. Stand Up News Part 2, when we return, it has Caribou Barbie in it.
Oh, boy.
20 minutes after the hour, right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God. That is hilarious.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Aha, uh-huh. The Stephanie Miller Show. 25 minutes after the hour, House Majority Whip James Clyburn coming up on the Newsmaker Hotline. Check us out. And finally, in stand-up news, despite a torrent of criticism from the media, Democrats, even some in her own party, Sarah Palin remains the hottest brand in politics.
How is that possible?
She remains extremely popular with the GOP grassroots, and most Republican Party leaders apparently would jump at the chance to have her headline one of their events.
Oh, my...
Go with that.
Mm-hmm.
We're a nation
exactly.
of idiots.
Politico surveyed nearly 50 prominent Republican Party officials and politicians, and she's apparently wildly popular.
You're darn tootin'. I'm running in 2012, you betcha. Because I got the support of the grassroots and probably Paul Revere and the Raiders and other 60s bands. Because people like the way I talk, by golly, because I don't use highfalutin elitist words or grammar or punctuation of any kind, because I'm just regular folks. I say what I mean what I say, except when I take the oath of office with all that I will faithfully execute mumbo-jumbo. The only executing I do is shooting anything that moves and some things that don't. I'm plain-spoken is what I'm saying, which is why the folks like me, especially the 9% of the folks whose opinion of me improved when I up and quit in the middle of my first term as governor. That's my base right there. People who don't know beans about policy and governing and answering questions from nosy elitist highfalutin TV folks from the liberal media with their liberal bias against people who don't know stuff. That's why I'm the most popular politician with the outside the Beltway crowd. And anyway, I had to give the belts back along with the other clothes, you betcha. Want to see some funny pageant walkins? I'm walking right out of here because I quit, you betcha.
That's all for stand-up news. I'm here all week. Tell your friends.
It's
by the way, can you believe she actually named her book Going Rogue? Here's a little tip. Don't use a line that Saturday Night Live used to mock you.
Yeah, yeah.
That people were laughing at you for. I think I'll use that as the title of my book, by golly, you
Go
betcha.
Going Rogue, by golly, you betcha.
I love this line in this story. One Republican Party activist said, women in Pennsylvania, there's those that are absolutely crazy about her. They say she's the Jennifer Aniston of the Republican Party.
Huh?
What?
That's good for if you want a friend to be president of the United States?
No, you don't want a friend to be president.
I like Jennifer Aniston. What is she? That, she has good
like
hair? Is that what she...
I don't know.
Okay. Lavender Pitt, the official roller derby queen of the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Morning, Mama. Morning, Mook.
Good morning.
I was just thinking how Sarah Palin's popularity can really be accounted for when you think about the very small number of people shouting very loudly.
Yes, which she started at her rally. She's like, I thought of that first, by golly, you betcha. 28 minutes after the hour. You know, the House Majority Whip is in charge of rounding up the votes.
That's right.
So we will talk to James Clyburn next, the great congressman from South Carolina, as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You're just a hard, scheming old woman, aren't you?
Ugly, too.
Thank you. 33 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Kevin in Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
you're
good morning.
On The Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
I'll move the comment on the health care debate, after all, and particularly the public option, as went down in flames in the Finance Committee yesterday. I was listening to Senator Schumer,
mm-hmm.
and I thought he was a little weak, especially a lot of people going around saying everybody needs to get with their inner LBJ. LBJ is a big story, but I heard him say specifically he believes that we'll get a public option, and to me that reflected weakness in terms of he should be saying, I believe we'll get a bill. In other words, just as you mentioned earlier in the show, this bill without a public option is just an additional financial burden on the people of the United States.
Well, I mean, I think, Kev, I don't know. I think he did put a positive spin on what happened yesterday. I don't think anybody thought that the public option was going to pass the Senate Finance Committee, but what he was saying is he got more votes than he thought he would for his public option plan. So we'll see. I mean, there are people like Senator Harkin and others that are still saying we have the vote. So we'll see. If only there was someone in the know. Why? Someone that is proving that not every politician from South Carolina has taken leave of their senses. House Majority Whip Congressman James Clyburn of the great state of South Carolina. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning. How are you?
You are single-handedly redeeming your state these days.
Thank you so much. I'll tell you, we need a lot of help down there.
Well, you know, Congressman, it certainly occurs to me that you know, the House, where you're rounding up votes, is not the problem, correct? What happened in the Senate Finance Committee, obviously, is troubling to a lot of progressives. What's your take?
Well, yes. The fact of the matter is we had a slight setback on yesterday. I think that the two votes that took place in the Senate on the public option are a bit troubling, to say the least. But, you know, in L over two is over. I'm saying to people that that's not really unexpected.
Right.
We still feel that when we get to the point of melding the two bills in the Senate, there's still another opportunity for us to revisit this. But even if the Senate were to produce a bill without a public option, that will not stop the House from pursuing a strong public option. And as I said the last time we discussed this, I'm convinced that the road to a public option must flow through some laboratories that have to exist. Now, let me tell you why I'm saying this, because I think it's important for people to understand where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
If we pass the bill today, as it has been discussed and proposed by all five committees, we have two committees in the House that have already proposed legislation, as well as one in the Senate. We now have a committee in the House and one in the Senate discussing. All these discussions on H.R. 3200 say that the so-called exchange within which the public option will exist will not take place until 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we want the bill to be effective by the end of this year. Now, by the end of this year, we want to outlaw denials because of pre-existing condition. We want to outlaw rescissions because of catastrophic illness. We want to encourage by legislation prevention, and by that to get rid of co-payments and high deductibles for prevention programs. We want to do all that immediately. Now, what happens in that three-year period? Let me tell you what's going to happen in that three-year period. Because we are outlawing pre-existing denials and rescissions, you're going to have insurance companies jacking up the rates in that three-year period.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the question is, what is to stop them from doing it?
Mm-hmm.
How? What's in this legislation that we're doing to stop this from happening?
Right. And I think I heard today, Congressman, private insurance company profits have gone up something over like 400%. I believe the average salaries of these insurance company CEOs is $12 million a year.
And they're going to go up because they are going to keep feeding their bottom line. They're going to keep sending dividend checks to their shareholders. And they're going to get it out of the hides of the people who are paying the premiums. The premiums are going to skyrocket in that three-year period. I've said to my leadership, what we're doing with H.R. 3200 is creating a donut hole that will exist for 3 years. And unless we fill that donut hole with some laboratories or some pilot programs so that people will see that something is happening that will benefit them, we are going to have some catastrophic results at the polls next November, as well as in 2012.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, do you agree? Howard Dean said, you know, of the Senate finance bill, this is a bill that George Bush would love. It's a massive redistribution of government taxpayers' money to the insurance industry. He said it's a bad bill. It doesn't insure people. It spends an awful lot of money, gives it away to the insurance companies. I don't think ultimately the bill will have. He says, I think the bill will have a public option, because I don't think the Democratic Party will stand for this. He, like Senator Harkin, says, we have the votes. We have 51, 52 senators who will vote for some sort of public option. Do you agree?
Yes, I agree. But the problem is getting it out of the committee.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the last time we lost this thing in 1994, we lost it in the House because we couldn't, by one vote, could not get it out of the committee. Now, the thing's got to come out of the committee. Now, what does it take to do that? The only way for us to get to this public option at this point, it seems to me, is for the House to pass the public option and to get it into the conference and then try to get it out of the conference, which I think the votes will be in the conference for a public option. The votes are not in the committee, the Senate Finance Committee, for the public option, but there will be sufficient votes in a conference from the House and the Senate for a public option to go to a floor, to a vote on the floor of the Senate, and I think the 51 votes, or even 50, if the president, if the vice president is presiding, then he could break the tie. All we would need is 50 votes from senators to get us a public option.
Congressman, so, I got to get your take on that. I mean, you know, the fact that you're, among others, obviously keeping your head down and just trying to get this work done in a climate that I know you've been there many, many years. I have never seen. I mean, I know that your colleague, I hate to use the word, but Joe Wilson, of course, you know, as you know, the Republican Party is using it as a fundraising tool, the fact that he shouted, you know, you lie at the president. You know, your colleague, Representative Franks, was just caught on tape yesterday calling the president an enemy to humanity. How do you, what do you do in an environment like this?
Well, I think you said it right. You sort of keep your head down and you keep plowing forward. But you know, I tell people all the time. I've seen this this movie before. I've lived long enough, I've been around here long enough, I guess I should say, to remember what we went through in the 60s and 70s. Here in this body, I remember Strom Thurmond grabbing Ralph Yarborough, wrestling him to the floor in a Senate building to keep him from voting on a civil rights bill. These people are taking this same old playbook and are running with it again. That's why I did what I did as it relates to Joe Wilson. And I said to all of my folks, let me tell y'all something. This, if we don't check this now, we are going to have a climate floating around here that none of us will be able to get any work done. You cannot pass these bills unless rules are followed and decorum is, in fact, maintained.
Yep.
And I believe by doing what we did with Joe Wilson, it put everybody on notice that we are not going to excuse this kind of behavior, so you better check it right now. And so if we had not done that, I would hasten to say that it would be chaos in the House of Representatives.
Yep, absolutely. Not while you're around. Representative James Clyburn, Majority Whip, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, thank you. There he goes, the great whip from the single-handedly holding up South Carolina's reputation at this point.
Yeah.
Which is collapsing under the strain of the Joe Wilsons and the Governor Mark Sanfords and the other asshats that currently represent South Carolina.
Yes. It's a beautiful state, though.
Oh, indeed.
Yes.
42 minutes. It deserves more James Clyburns, in my opinion.
It certainly does. Mm-hmm.
42 minutes after the hour. All right. We will break down the whole health care fight and where we're at now as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Who are those freaks?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Let's do it. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Do it.
47 minutes after the hour. The hilarious Carl Frisch from Media Matters will join us to co-host another rollicking edition of Right Wing World in just a few minutes. All right. Chris, you've lived in Arizona. This is another episode of WTF with Arizona.
Yeah, I've lived in Arizona for 13 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, these are the people we're currently trying to negotiate with on health care reform and other things. Representative Trent Franks, Republican of Arizona, has called the president an enemy of humanity.
You know, I've dealt with Representative Franks personally.
Have you?
He's a bit of an a-hole.
Really?
Yeah.
I would not have sussed that out from that sort of rhetoric.
Yeah, he's a bit of an a-hole.
By an enemy of humanity, he means he's black. I don't know if you've noticed this.
In case you haven't noticed, he's black.
He denounced President Obama as an enemy of humanity who does insane things. His remarks, sadly for him, caught on video.
Yes.
At the, that was a pack of crazy, that How to Take Back America conference in St. Louis.
Yes.
Obama's first act as president of any consequence in the middle of a financial meltdown was to send taxpayers' money overseas to pay for the killing of unborn children in other countries. Now, I got to tell you, a president will do that. There's almost nothing that you should be surprised at after that. We shouldn't be shocked that he does all these other insane things. A president that has lost his way that badly, that has no ability to see the image of God in these little fellow human beings, if he can't do that right, then he has no place in any station of government, and we need to realize that he is an enemy of humanity.
Abortion is legal.
Yes.
Has been for a long time.
Yes.
Last
month, even longer in other countries.
Franks participated in the teabagging in Washington. He also recently told a town hall crowd that he intended to file a lawsuit related to Obama's gift certificate. Oh, pardon me.
Will you ask the president to show me his gift certificate? I mean, it's a gift certificate. His birth certificate?
Well, am I drunk?
See, there is no difference between, at this point, Republican elected officials and the right-wing crazies.
No, there isn't.
This seems like a right-wing idea out of Arizona, by the way. Guess what's going to be legal?
Starting today.
Starting today, bringing concealed guns into bars.
Great
idea. You know, alcohol and firearms, always a good combination.
Yeah, but you're not allowed to drink when you're carrying a firearm.
Sure.
Right.
But if
Could
it's
be
concealed,
drunk when you go in.
Yeah, but if it's concealed, how do you know that that person's not supposed to drink? They didn't think this went through.
Mm-hmm. Starting today, those carrying concealed weapons are allowed to enter Arizona's roughly 5,300 establishments licensed to sell alcohol. Alcohol and gunplay. Woohoo!
Yeah.
That is, boy, well, howdy. Least, a good idea.
At least that's Yahoo's shooting each other.
They didn't even allow that in the Old West.
No.
Why are they allowing it today?
If those bar and restaurant owners don't want guns on the property, they must post a sign indicating that they are not allowed. Unless, of course, the person's already too drunk that's carrying a concealed weapon to even read the sign. Maybe it's a little blurry.
Or maybe they'll just shoot the guy telling him not to bring the gun
shoot
in.
Holes through the sign. Yeah.
You can't bring that in here.
Don Carson, one of the level-headed Arizonans saving America today, Chris.
Yes.
He has owned Don and Charlie's Steakhouse in Scottsdale for 28 years.
Don and Charlie's. I've actually eaten there, yes.
He said, I honestly don't think firearms, drinking, and dining are a match. Thank you, Don. Strikes me as a worse idea than a baby in a bar, even. But that's just me.
Look at you! You have a baby! In a bar!
It was up until about 12 years ago that they allowed polling places in bars in Arizona.
Ah.
Drunk voting.
Yes, that's you get what your votes for.
Would explain George W. Bush.
Well, I voted for who? Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay, at the aforementioned, they're just getting wackier and wackier, the right-wing wacky conventions, aren't they?
Yes.
This was our good friend Phyllis Schlafly's. Yes, her little Jew down there. The Take Back America something?
Whatever.
Yeah.
Here's what you missed, Jim. At the How to Take Back America conference last weekend, conservative speaker Kitty Werthmann led a workshop called How to Recognize Living Under Nazis and Communists. Talk show host Janet Porter. Oh, we've seen her at various conventions and things, haven't we?
If you were actually living amongst Nazis or communists, you would know it.
Yeah.
She gushed about how Werthmann's description of Austria in the 1930s is a mirror to America today, noting they had Joseph Goebbels. We have Mark Lloyd, the diversity czar.
Huh? Who? Huh?
That seems like a good analogy
there. They must not have any diversity! There must be one people! One race!
Yeah, the Nazis were against diversity,
yes,
big time.
Hitler was from Austria.
So how can you compare
Goebbels
to...
Can I have my cartoon Nazi march, please? I think that would be helpful here. During her session, Werthmann went through a litany of examples of how President Obama is like Adolf Hitler. She noted that Hitler, who acted, quote, like an American politician, was elected in a 100% Christian nation. Werthmann explained how universal health care and equal rights amendment and increased taxes were telltale signs of Nazism.
What?
He also warned the audience, if we had our guns... See, there's kind of a theme going through all these... If we had our guns, we would have fought a bloody battle. So keep your guns and buy more guns and buy ammunition. Take back America. Don't let them take the country into socialism. And I refer again, Hitler's party was National Socialism. And that's what we're having right now, which is bordering on Marxism.
Oh, my God.
Oh. I, yes, Jim?
Yeah, someone from Austria complaining about too much diversity and then calling America's first black president a Nazi.
It's a little... Yes.
It's hard to wrap your brain around.
House of Mirrors. It's,
yeah.
What?
Yes, oh,
bless you.
We're playing.
You okay?
Grasping for Straws.
Yes. The communists and the Nazis were not on the same page at all.
No.
There were brutal street fights in Germany.
Fought each other.
Yes.
In fact, the National Socialists were there as a counterweight to the communists.
The communists were on our side in fighting the Nazis.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. At least we make an effort to even understand their ridiculous historical analogies. I'm like, what? All right, well, that's why that makes no sense either politically or historically, but okay. How about the fine folks at Newsmax.com?
Yeah, stumbled across this one this morning.
Yes, the fine Americans at Newsmax.com. Jim, if you think the environment's getting a little toxic, a little dangerous, a little, what with the Facebook poll about if the president should be killed and the killing of the census worker. Someone at Newsmax has posted a Obama risks a domestic military intervention.
Hmm.
Meaning it would be a bloodless coup by our own military is what they're suggesting, I guess, against the
bloodless.
President.
I don't think they're planning bloodless at all. They're planning an actual violent overthrow of the government.
No, John Perry, who wrote this, he's apparently a prize-winning newspaper editor. It doesn't say what sort of prize here, Chris.
Oh, and what kind of newspaper?
He's a regular columnist, apparently, for Newsmax. He writes, there's a remote, although gaining possibility, America's military will intervene as a last resort to resolve the Obama problem.
The Obama problem? We have
a problem?
The problem that he's president, I guess. Don't dismiss it as unrealistic. So he's encouraging our military to overthrow the Obama.
The government.
America isn't the third world. If a military coup does occur here, it will be civilized. He's calling for a civilized military coup.
A civilized military coup. Yeah, like that, the one we fostered in Chile.
That it has never happened doesn't mean it won't. Describing what may be afoot is not to advocate it. So view the following through military eyes. Officers swear to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and against all enemies, foreign and domestic. They do not swear to obey the orders of the President of the United States. So see, he's kind of giving them some marching orders here. Top military officers can see the Constitution they are sworn to defend being trampled as American institutions and enterprises are nationalized. Under this, then the Bush administration probably should have been the first.
Yeah.
Speaking of trampling,
the commander-in-chief is the commander of the military. Mm-hmm. They are required to follow the orders of the commander-in-chief.
Yeah, chain of command.
Wait, there's more. Listen, do you have a newspaper prize? No. You and your Emmy hush over there. They can see that Americans are increasingly alarmed that this nation under President Obama may not even be recognizable as America by the 2012 election, in which he will surely see continuation in office. Oh, so there he's just suggesting it might be good to do it before the 2012. Mm-hmm. They can see the economy ravaged by deficits, George Bush taxes, George Bush unemployment, George Bush, and impending inflation is financially reliant on foreign lender governments. George Bush, China, thank you.
Yeah.
They can, I'll do the rest of this little... Newsmax piece.
Maybe Carl Frisch would like to hear that.
And I think Carl Frisch will maybe have some thoughts on that from Media Matters as we dive right into a right-wing world on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
StephanieMiller.com, that website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LeBoy, voice Dee Dee Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Michael Moore joins us tomorrow in this very hour on the Stephanie Miller program. Do not miss it.
That's right.
1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number toll-free from anywhere to join the party. Hey, speaking of parties, we're just joining the party at Newsmax.com, where the fine Americans... Jim, the headline is Obama risks a domestic military intervention, apparently by our own military, is what they're encouraging over there at Newsmax.
How is he risking that? Being black?
What are they going to be taking care of, Stephanie?
What?
The Obama problem.
Problem.
The Obama problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Substitute Obama with Negro, and you know where this guy's coming from.
John Perry is a prize-winning newspaper editor. We don't know what sort of prize. I think it could have been a prize from a bubblegum machine, but they're just, you know, you can kind of count anything.
You know, from a box of Cracker Jacks.
A T-ball trophy could be considered a prize.
He's a regular columnist for the Newsmax. He writes, imagine a bloodless coup to restore and defend the Constitution through... Jim, is this treason-y in any way? This seems a little along the line.
If they're going to try to overthrow the elected government of the United States, it's not going to be a bloodless coup.
Yeah.
Imagine a bloodless coup to restore and defend the Constitution through an interim administration.
Ah,
that would do the serious business of governing and defending the nation. Skilled, military-trained nation builders would replace accountability-challenged radical left commissars. Having bonded with his twin teleprompters, the president would be detailed for ceremonial speech-making. Oh, I see. They'd make him sort of just a, like the queen. They would sort of make him a...
A skank?
Just a ceremonial figure.
Oh, okay.
So they're nice like that, but yeah. I guess they would let President Obama stay, however. A coup is not an ideal option. Oh, my goodness. John Perry with a little slice of reason there.
All right.
He's just saying.
I'm not saying they should do it. I'm saying if they did, I wouldn't mind so much.
A coup is not an ideal option, but Obama's radical ideal is not acceptable or reversible. Unthinkable? Then think up an alternative nonviolent solution to the Obama problem. Writes the award-winning John Perry, who once...
Those people had a Lincoln problem.
I think he might have gotten a participation ribbon in a three-legged race in third grade. Yeah. That was the prize he won.
I need someone, a professional, to spoon me through right-wing world today as it's getting increasingly scary. Why? Carl Frisch from Media Matters for America. Thank God you're here. Hold me.
Well, you know, it's hard out there when you get pulled over for a GWB.
Hey!
Hey, with the flowers and the slagging.
Governing well black, everybody.
Yes.
Wow. You know, you've been documenting this stuff for a long time, Carl, but is it me? I mean, we have a Representative Franks yesterday getting caught on tape calling the president an enemy of humanity. You have this Phyllis Schlafly convention where, people are told to, you know, get more guns because this is, don't let socialism, Nazism, whatever, overtake America. I mean, this is getting downright frightening.
It's lunatic talk. I have it on good authority that Phyllis Schlafly has already stocked up on 18 years worth of hairspray going around. this has been happening since the beginning of this administration. And it's funny, you mentioned that Newsmax columnist talking about, you know, not saying but just saying about a coup. Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, these people have talked about coups as well. And it's funny how they seem to think that they can get away with it just by adding a question mark at the end of everything that they say.
Exactly. Well, you wrote a great piece about Glenn Beck, who hosted a group of moms who theoretically represented what's going on in the minds of the American people. And how did he find? He found an African-American woman named Mary Baker, who recently wrote a piece called Why I'm No Longer an African-American, who blames the racial divisiveness going on the president, I guess. Right?
Yes. That's very common, though, I think. You know, Stephanie, if you'd get out a little bit more and make more black friends, you'd find that many of them do renounce their racial heritage.
Yes, yes.
It's very common.
Well, she in her article, she argues that Obama's election has resulted in even more racial division, damn him, and apparently it's stemming from the black power movement. That's where the racism's coming from, apparently.
Well, yeah. I mean, once they raised the fist-pumping flag over the White House, it was over. This is ridiculous. At the end of the day, there's a long history in the Republican Party and the conservative movement of finding these screwball people to make them all feel better about being just a little bit racist sometimes.
yes.
And, you know, it's like saying, you know, Well, I don't have any black friends, but we had a black speaker at our club meeting the other day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, thank God you brought the extra snark today, Carl, because it's time to dive into the right-wing world. Here we go.
Step right up, get your Republican talking points, get your peanut-sized brains. Your brain must be this Obama problem. I think you know what I'm saying. To go on this run!
Okay. Britt Hume, Carl, on the Britt Bear Show. Can you believe that they can even spin something like the president taking 14 hours to try to bring the Olympics to America? You would think that'd be a proud American moment, a proud, you know. And they got to spin this into something bad, right?
Yeah. It's been quite funny watching the right wing freak out over the notion that we might have the Olympics in America.
Yeah.
Yes. With all the jobs and the things
the
that would generate.
And the
yeah.
athletics and the sports heroes from around the world.
And the patriotism.
Foreigners.
Yes.
Yeah,
foreigners.
Let's be honest, though. That symbol of the Olympics, if you just manipulate those circular uh-huh. rings a little bit,
yes.
they do become Nazi swastikas.
Well, they did in 1936 anyway.
Well, yeah. Britt
Hume.
There are
going to
be people who will always suspect that he was on a political errand from Mayor Daley of Chicago, who has staked a lot of prestige on landing the Olympics. And a lot of people will, I think, not ever get over that idea.
So you get the implication there, Carl. He takes his marching orders from, you know, a Chicago politician.
Well, and you know, no matter how we get around this, there's going to be a lot of people at Fox News who are poisoned by fluoride in their water.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Mandrake. Do not avoid women.
Speaking of psychological warfare, you know, they keep telling us the public option is dead. The public option is dead. You know, when you still have people like Senator Harkin, who runs the committee that Ted Kennedy ran, who's saying we still can have a public option, I kind of get the idea they're trying to freak us out. Charles Krauthammer.
The public option is dead. I mean, mm-hmm. we've been saying it over and over again. It's a dead parrot.
Was today the end?
Well, I think the parrot was nailed to the stake. When you have a 3-vote majority and you lose by 5, and you know that there are a lot of blue dog Democrats in the House who are against it, it will pass in the House, but in the Senate it doesn't have a chance.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does.
Well, you know,
if you count a majority.
Funny, I'm talking about death. I mean, I don't think that Charles Krauthammer is dead, even though he hasn't had a facial expression in the last 15
yes.
years. You know, it's quite funny when you consider that this is just one of 3 Senate committees to take up health care,
mm-hmm.
and the other 2, public option, remained intact.
Right.
So, yeah, are we there yet? No, but it's far from dead. As a matter of fact, if you were to think of it in terms of it's going to be included in the House, so that's 1 of 4, and then you've got 3 Senate committees, 2 of which have included public option. That's 3 out of 4. That's pretty darn good so far.
Yep. I agree with Howard Dean, who says, you know, we can do, you know, he echoed Senator Harkin's comments that we can do this. Stephen Hayes on the Britt Bear Show.
If the president signs on to a bill that goes through reconciliation, I think he will be in serious political trouble because he ran as a candidate opposed to budget gimmickry, and that would be sort of the mother of all budget gimmickry.
Budget gimmickry. Wow. I don't think I heard them use that phrase when they were passing the Bush tax cuts. Did you, Carl?
No. otherwise known as the nuclear option, which is funny because it was never called the nuclear option when they used it.
Right.
The nuclear option always was used to describe removing the ability to filibuster entirely from the Senate rules, which, of course, this has nothing to do with. And as a matter of fact, the only talk that they're having of using reconciliation is for things like the public option. So everything else in terms of the health care bill would be able to go through normal Senate procedure.
Right. Carl, as one of the smear merchants at Media Matters, sit down, young man, and take a schooling from Bill O'Reilly.
The attacks on the Fox News channel bear this out. FNC is the only TV news organization in the country where traditional conservative voices are given a prominent role. The left hates that. And the attacks on me, Glenn Beck, and Sean Hannity are unrelenting, personal, and hateful.
Personal?
Yes, once again, as by posting the actual audio and video of things that they have said, and thereby catching them in easily caught lies. You see how you're being personal and hateful, Carl?
I do, and I want to apologize to Bill O'Reilly. I will stop asking how exactly a falafel holds up under a shower. I realize that's personal, it's hurtful, and I don't want to cause him any more pain.
Okay, good. Bill O'Reilly again.
If the educational system and the media industry are both dedicated to promoting liberal beliefs, How long will it be before the USA becomes a secular progressive country? Those kids are going to grow up. Peer pressure is a powerful force among young Americans. It's a lot easier to get along if you go along. This is indeed a very dangerous situation.
Oh, Carl.
He's right. Book learning is bad.
Yeah.
You know, but isn't it amazing? I'm sure you saw this footage of in Jesus Camp of them literally worshiping cardboard cutouts of George W. Bush.
Yeah, I saw it. I think they were airing it during Hitler Week on the History Channel. it was just ridiculous. And you know what? I don't mind that they prayed for Bush in the same way. I don't mind when school children sing about the president, regardless of the president. It's the freaking president.
Yeah.
You know, we had, when I was growing up, we had photos of Reagan and Bush on the wall at my school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In every classroom, basically. So the notion that this is some kind of indoctrination is just a bunch of BS. And you know,
were you a little liberal rabble rouser even back then? Did you object to the pictures?
I was a right-wing closet case. but you know, I think that any parent who buys into this garbage should have their homeschool diploma taken back.
Yes.
So here we go again with the president can't possibly do more than one thing at once, two things at once. I mean,
we've got a general in Afghanistan saying we need troops. He can't make a decision about sending more troops, or else we're risking failure. We've got unemployment at 9.7%. We've got a president seems so busy going on David Letterman, all the Sunday shows, giving speeches, and, you know, are there not more pressing issues than getting the troops, the reinforcements they need, the equipment they need, getting the economy back on track?
So he's not doing anything.
No.
Sean Hannity is quite a good journalist, actually. I don't know if, you know, he's in there. He's got sources in the administration.
Yeah.
That are influential, and they're like their sources called delusion and paranoia.
Yes.
you know, it's remarkable. I don't think Sean Hannity can be paranoid and delusion at the same time. He has no business talking about the president being able to do more than one thing at a time.
Yeah. Apparently that's never been done before. President giving speeches and going on TV. Apparently,
well,
this is
President Bush, you know, who couldn't chew pretzels and watch a football game at the same time.
That's right.
Carl Frisch from the fine folks at Media Matters for America. Thanks for taking time for us, Carl.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. Carl Frisch. He brought the extra snark today, which I needed. All right, 20 minutes after the hour, we will break it down on healthcare and what happened yesterday as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
You commie, homo-loving sons of guns.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Oh, that's not necessary. 24 minutes after the hour, Dave in Memphis, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hey, Dave.
Well. How are we doing today?
Good, Dave. Go ahead.
You know, you talk about Rush Limbaugh and all those guys. They are a problem, but you know where I see the bigger problem?
Where?
Is with liberal radio.
Why is that?
There is no pushback. When you're in a debate like this, you guys try to approach it with, you know, it's funny. The only guy on TV that's doing something is David Letterman. He's pounding this Sarah Palin, and people are getting a message. So, but the liberal...
Oh, we've done a fair amount of Sarah Palin pounding.
Did you hear our first hour this morning?
I heard the first hour, yeah. Now, you guys are an exception.
Thank you.
But I'm just saying, most of, overall, where you got these guys like Laura Ingraham, you got Rush Limbaugh, you got Mike Medved, Mark Levin, you got all these guys. It's around the clock, and you just got a smidgen of liberal guys, and then they're not really attacking with. They need to attack with baseless claims, make up stuff, just like these guys.
Okay. All right, Dave. All right. Thank you for that really bad advice. All right. Hey, can I have some fine American music?
Sure.
Speaking of pushback, though, tomorrow in this very hour, you cannot miss.
Yeah.
filmmaker Michael Moore. He issued a warning to Democrats who have been cool to President Obama's call for health care reform. Get on board or prepare to lose your seat. I do think it's time to lay the smack down.
I think so.
He says to the Democrats in Congress who don't quite get it, I want to offer a personal pledge. I and a lot of other people have every intention of removing you from Congress in the next election if you stand in the way of health care legislation the people want. That is not a hollow or idle threat. We will come to your district. We will work against you first in the primary and if we have to in the general election. Democrats have started to take for granted the support of women, unions, and low-income workers, says Moore, who's promoting capitalism, a love story. That's his new film.
Yes.
Which I've heard is great. He said, you think we're just going to go along because with you because we're Democrats? You should think again, because we'll find Republicans who are smart enough to realize that the majority of Americans want universal health care. That's right. That's absolutely right. Don't take this for granted. Michael Moore. Laying down the smack down. Yeah, we've had Kent Conrad on this program.
We have. He's a fan of the show.
I just don't understand when people take this defeatist tone, particularly in the media. He has just said repeatedly, we don't have the vote. We can't. We don't have the vote. And look, Senator Harkin, who just took over for Ted Kennedy, mm-hmm. says, yes, we do. Howard Dean says, yes, we mm-hmm. do. Keep fighting. You know, that's the thing. I don't understand, you know, as Jim says, why we're negotiating in the media and starting from such a weak position. Liberal Democrats failed Tuesday to inject the public option into health care legislation in the Senate Finance Committee, which, as the House Majority Whip James Clyburn told us earlier, was not a surprise.
Right.
I mean, it's not like this was like, oh, no. The 15-8 rejection marked a victory for Max Baucus's watered-down piece of...
crap.
Yes. Oh, they're calling it a middle-of-the-road
measure.
Oh,
is that? Oh, okay.
He said, my job is to put together a bill that gets to 60 votes. No one shows me how to get to 60 votes with a public option. Chuck Schumer said on TV yesterday, I will show you. We can get there. I will show you how we do it.
And Senator, why is 60 the magic number?
Yes. 51's fine. 50. Senator Jay Rockefeller, one of the put forth one of the amendments mm-hmm. that would offer a public option.
They're getting away with banditry.
Insurance companies.
And they revel in it.
Yep. They are. People are so in love with the middle of the road. You know what's in the middle of the road?
Yes.
Roadkill.
Roadkill. Yeah. Exactly. I was trying to think of that joke. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. That was the joke. He said, who comes first, the insurance companies or the American people? That's exactly the right way to phrase that. In that vote, five Democratic senators joined the Republicans to defeat the Rockefeller Amendment by a vote of 15-8. They were Max Baucus of Montana, Kent Conrad of North Dakota, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, Bill Nelson, Florida, Tom Carper of Delaware. Okay. We will... break down what happens next as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller
is an attractive nuisance. Damn near irresistible.
Dave in Detroit, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Hi, Dave. Hello.
Hey, good, sugar baby.
Hello.
Stephanie.
Please call me Jiggles.
Here's my gripe, and I'd like to make a couple points.
Mm-hmm.
This, the insurance companies are being able to push this tort reform bill out there like it's a real issue. Now, it may sound like it's a real issue to a lot of people, but, you know, there's been studies over the last couple of years. The Senate did a study 3 years ago that concluded that the reason that health care was rising like eight times the cost of inflation at that time were for a lot of reasons, but tort reform was like on the bottom. It was like 1.5% of the cost of the rise of health care. Okay, now it's important to remember that insurance companies,
it's mostly important to Republicans because they can take out trial lawyers,
yeah.
which are a big Democratic
and it can take away your right to sue a doctor in case, you know, they do something really
right.
really wrong.
That's exactly what one of my points was, is mm-hmm. that's my line of defense if something happens.
Right.
Now, let's remember that insurance companies are the ones charging the doctors for their coverage, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
Now, if this is
and we do,
problem,
by the way, my brother-in-law is a doctor, and we do have to do something about that. I mean, malpractice cost is driving a lot of good doctors out of business.
But Stephanie, here's the answer. Well, they're the ones billing us too much money. They're billing the doctors. If this is such a problem, how has their profits gone up 450% in the last 10 years?
Yep.
I mean, obviously, it comes out of what they make, and they're certainly making plenty of money. It's a false problem. We know it's only 1.5% of the reason of the rise of health care. Secondly, it's my line of defense. Thirdly, it's accountability. You start taking accountability away where they can't be, you know, I mean, they don't have to pay if something happens. I mean, that's all for the benefit of the insurance companies.
Yep.
It's not part of the real problem.
Yep, I agree with it was, you know, Senator Rockefeller. Let's stand up for the American people for once and not the, I mean, seriously. Has your business, look at the economy. Has your business, has the profits gone up 450%? Who can say that?
Hell to the no.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The senators who voted in favor of the public option put forward by Senator Rockefeller. Hang on one second. Let me get applause ready. Senator Rockefeller, obviously. Senator Bingaman of New Mexico. John Kerry of Massachusetts. Maria Cantwell of Washington. Ron Wyden of Oregon. Chuck Schumer of New York. Bob Menendez of New Jersey. And Debbie Stabenow of the great state of Michigan.
Whom we know.
They put forward Senator Schumer's public option.
Yes.
Compromise, which was considered less liberal, I guess, than Jay Rockefeller's.
And it did get more votes.
Yeah, in that 13-10.
Right.
The three Democratic senators who joined the Republicans voting against the measure, Baucus, Conrad, Lincoln, Senator Schumer yesterday.
This vote will be a good test so that the American people know there is significant support in this committee for a level playing field public option.
Yep. He went on to talk about the private insurance companies. Senator Schumer.
If the private insurance market is serving America so well, they have no public option to fear.
Yeah.
If they're serving it poorly, the public option will force them to serve better. So it's a win-win.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Stephanie in Madison, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hey, Steph. Great show.
Thank you.
May I be the official Gen Xer namesake sister of the Stephanie Miller Show?
Absolutely. I know. What was me hitting 38 yesterday and all?
Ha! Yes, I know. Well, no, actually, we're the same age as the president. So, but anyway.
Whatever.
Wait a minute. If you're the same age as the president, you are not Gen X.
Xer too.
No, you're not.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
No.
Yes, we are.
Not demographically.
Go ahead, Steph.
I also want to just really quickly say that, you know, health care for all is a human cause, not a liberal.
I know.
I just hate that garbage.
Well, that's the thing. Most of these polls show, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of a 70% public approval or public option. That's not a liberal, some liberal idea.
No,
right?
No. And everything creepy always goes back to the health insurance company. So that's just, you know, another sign that they're just greedy and we really need a single payer. Or if we have the public option, doggone better be very strong with a single payer component for all the poor people, all the people that can't pay. And
right.
One last thing, my girlfriend and I have our tickets for the Stephen Press Show.
The Stephanie Miller Bill Press event in
yes.
Madison on October 10th. Woohoo!
Yes, at the Barrymore. It's so
yes.
great I can walk. But we want to invite everybody also from Sheboygan.
Sheboygan!
Sheboygan!
Come on down. All right, Steph. I'll see you there, sister. All right, there she goes. Sheboygan. Okay. Very excited about that. Come on out and see Mama and Bill Press in Madison, Wisconsin.
That's right. And there's information in the calendar of events section of the show section of StephanieMiller.com.
Senator Tom Harkin recently told our friend Bill Press, in fact, the Democrats comfortably have the votes for a public option. He said, I've polled senators. The vast majority of Democrats may be approaching 50 support a public option. So why shouldn't we have a public option? We have the votes. Thank you. He went on to say, I believe we'll have the 60 votes now that we have the new senator from Massachusetts to at least get it on the Senate floor. But once we cross that hurdle, we only need 51 votes for a public option. I believe there are comfortably 51 votes for a public option. So I say, get it. Okay. Senator, I spend too much time with dogs.
You really do.
Get it. Go and get it. Okay. Senator Kent Conrad, Democrat.
Who needs to be
North...
whacked in the nose of the newspaper.
Yeah.
The devil is in the details. And in the details of his amendment, he does tie the public option
to Medicare levels of reimbursement.
You know, yeah, the devil is in the details. But if you looked at either the Rockefeller or the Schumer options, they were really good options.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Max Baucus.
I can count. And no one has been able to show me how we could count up to 60 votes with a public option in the bill. And thus I'm constrained to vote against the amendment.
So let's give up, because, I mean, I don't understand the strategy here.
It's the insurance companies that are buying these Democratic mm-hmm. senators off. That's what you need to understand.
You're on Chuck Grassley's side, who's out telling the right-wing lies at the town halls.
I oppose the amendment because I think it is a slow walk towards government-controlled, single-payer health care.
If only.
Yeah. I wish. How about a sprint?
Don't I wish we were smart enough and principled enough for that. Senator John Ensign, Republican mm-hmm. of Nevada.
This is a slippery slope for us to go down. The public option is exactly what we believe, most of us do on this side, that will lead to a government single-payer system in the future.
As the government takes over more
and more of our health care system.
I don't think anyone who's been caught in a messy extramarital thing should ever use the word slippery slope.
No.
That's what his mistress said.
I think he knows from slippery slopes.
Apparently.
Ensign, hasn't he been demoted to seaman by now?
Oh, no.
It's a naval rank.
Jim Louise Ward.
Enlisted rank. That's below the lowest officer thing.
Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican of Utah.
What they're doing is they're trying to do this in increments. If they can't do it directly, they'll do it in increments until they finally get us to the point where you're going to have socialized medicine.
Ooh,
and if that happens, the greatest country in the world with what I consider to be the greatest health care system in the world is going to be deeply, deeply harmed.
It's going to be like Denmark.
Actually, 37th, right after Slovenia.
Yeah.
Well, it's the greatest healthcare system in the world if you can afford access to it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Betsy in Minneapolis, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Betsy.
Oh, hi, Jiggles and the Mook.
Thank you.
They got to call this bill, that backass, he's got to call the bill what it is, and that's the bimbo bill. And you know congressmen love a bimbo. It's the big insurance monopoly bailout.
All right, thank you.
We're doing the same thing that we did with the banks and financial industry.
All right. You wrote that yourself.
Not any better.
All right. You're right, Betsy. She wrote that herself. It's the bimbo bill. You would think Senator Ensign would be for that.
Oh, yes.
Stop it now. All right. 42 minutes after the hour. More on what the polling is showing and what Governor Chairman Dr. Howard Dean had to say yesterday as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ew, even I found that to be in bad taste.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Steffi.
Do you love me?
Yeah.
Steffi.
Don't get Bobby Sherman references on every radio show.
No, you don't.
1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Kurt in White Bear, Montana?
No, Minnesota.
Minnesota, sorry.
Minnesota. Hey, Steph, I really have a question. I'm a staunch conservative, so don't jump all over me, please.
Listen, I'm related to a lot of all y'alls. I ain't scared of you.
Okay, good. why is the public option so important to you?
Because it ensures competition. Because right now, the private health insurance companies, their profits have gone up 450%. Even if you're a capitalist, do you think that sounds fair?
Well, it depends on where we're starting from and where we're going to, I guess, without knowing that if they were making, you know, a dollar before and they made $450.
Well, they most certainly were not making a dollar before.
It's how they're making it that's the issue.
Well, and the fact that they obviously drop people when they get sick. There's a million practices the health insurance industry engages in because they can, Kurt. Because they can. They have no competition. They have no...
The stock price goes up when they deny more people coverage.
There's other ways of handling that through different groups.
Like what?
How? But, well, for example, you can create bigger pools and things. I work for the state of Minnesota, and nobody ever gets dropped for anything because it's a big enough pool. Okay?
Well, if that were working that way all over the country, we wouldn't need health care reform, would we?
Well, you know, maybe President Obama, with his negotiating techniques, could work with the insurance companies and try to pull some of this together.
Well, they've done some of that, obviously. I mean, they've already done some of that, but, you know, clearly...
But without the threat of a public option, they're not going to do anything.
Right.
Well,
why should they?
The other thing I'll tell you is my father-in-law, he's the owner of a small business, 10 people, okay?
Me too.
Okay, and he has had some people get majorly, majorly sick. Cancer, two people on there. His rates went up, but nobody ever got dropped. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. My other concern...
But some small businesses can't take a hit like that.
Well,
yeah, if one of these guys gets sick, they're fired.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we get dropped.
Is that legal?
That's not legal, but it happens.
Whatever.
My concern is...
Come and get me, Copper.
How are we going to pay for this? I mean, I...
What do you mean, how are we going to pay for it? I mean...
I've looked at the different estimates coming out of the GAO and things, and they're talking about this thing running upwards of almost $1 trillion in 8 years, but the plan is supposed to go for 10.
Right, and the public option actually saves money. It's less expensive.
And how does that work?
And the president has said he won't sign anything that's not deficit neutral.
How can you increase, how can you give somebody this kind of care? And
you're
not
giving it to somebody. I mean, that's the problem.
You're paying a premium.
Right. Okay, so you pay a premium, and I'm assuming it'll work the same way like Social Security and Medicare goes. It'll go into a lockbox, and that'll pay for the costs, right?
Okay. Are we bringing back the Al Gore lockbox?
No. I wouldn't even discuss Al Gore. I mean, his inner circle is square, right? Let's face it.
Oh, that's funny. He made a joke. He's a funny conservative.
Tim Geithner is kind of square. Yeah.
His head is actually square.
Yeah, it is.
He looks like Gumby. Okay.
He was once a little green ball of cash.
Jim Ward, ladies and gentlemen, they don't give those Emmys to everybody. Nancy in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Hi, Jim and Chris.
Hello.
Love you guys.
Thank you.
Just wanted to suggest something to all of your listeners and my fellow Democrats. It's impossible for me to figure out where my congressional rep, who is a Democrat, stands on this issue right now. I've had some of the most absolutely insane form letters from him defending military spending, but I can't figure out where he is on this.
Mm-hmm.
If this was military spending, there wouldn't be this big, long discussion. The money would already be flowing to KBR, Halliburton, everybody else who wants and needs it.
Well, exactly. When you think the insane amount of taxpayer money that went down the black hole of Iraq and Halliburton, Blackwater. I mean, unbelievable.
So what I would like to ask people to do is start now hammering on their reps,
yep,
which I'm doing, and asking them to renounce their health insurance should they choose to not get it from
Thank
me.
Thank you. Thank you. Do not give up the fight. That's right. Can I have my fine American music? Speaking of fighters, Governor Chairman Dr. Howard Dean, whom we love,
mm-hmm,
and we know.
Yes.
Said the health care bill drawn up by Senator Max Baucus and the Senate Finance Committee is a terrible mistake that George W. Bush would have loved because it is a massive giveaway of taxpayer money to the health insurance industry. He said he believes there's a slim majority in the Senate that would support a health care bill that includes a public option. Do not give up the fight, 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 fight. This is, you have my permission to shove your representatives into the lockers, politically speaking only.
Not physically.
I said politically speaking.
Okay.
This is a bill.
Do they even have lockers in the Capitol?
I don't know. Under the bleachers. Something.
Okay.
This is a bill that George Bush would love. It's a massive redistribution of government taxpayer money to the insurance industry. Exactly the same thing that was going on with the banking industry and other industries on Wall Street. It's a bad bill, this Finance Committee bill. It doesn't insure people. It spends an awful lot of money, gives it away to the insurance companies. So I do think ultimately the bill will have a public option in it because I don't think the Democratic Party will stand for this. He says, like Senator Harkin, we have the 51, 52, whatever, how many votes we need to pass health care with a strong option. He issued a warning to Democrats on the matter. Every Democrat is going to sink or swim together on this. If we pass a bill that's just a big giveaway to the insurance industry, every Democrat will suffer. Thank you, Governor, Chairman Dr. Howard Dean. So, during the summer, many on the right claimed these screamers at the town halls were showing that Americans had turned against health care reform.
Computer says no.
No. Kaiser Family Foundation released its latest poll on health care reform. It shows voters are actually more enthusiastic about reforming our broken health care system than ever.
Good.
The poll finds 57%. That's nearly 60%, Jim.
Mm.
Now find health care reform more important than ever, a market increase since August. Which, you know, a lot of people were saying that once the screaming dies down, and the real work starts, this is what's going to happen. The president's job approval numbers have also leveled out, settling in the low 50s, comfortably next to those recent presidents. A number of top pollsters say his 52% average in Gallup's September survey is well within the expected range in the first year of a new administration. And he takes a massive amount of hits every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's sort of incredible in itself. Obama is certainly doing as well as or better than Reagan or Clinton, said the editor-in-chief of Gallup. His problem with his falling numbers at one point were being overwritten, said the head of the Pew polls. So
I think if he had just jumped on single-payer health care from the beginning and got it done, his numbers would be a lot higher.
Richard in Los Angeles, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Richard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have never heard this from anybody yet, and my statement is probably out in left field, but I'm a lefty. But I honestly don't care if the insurance companies go out of business. We need a single payer or a public option. They have made billions. They've stolen from us. They've cheated us. They've killed people. I wouldn't give one crap if every one of them just sank in the ground and died.
Oh, you are a left fielder. All right. But, you know, that's – no, but seriously, when people say, oh, it's going to hurt the insurance companies, okay, good.
Yeah. No, they've literally been killing people by denying them coverage to boost their profits.
Exactly. That he made my my 86-year-old Republican mom reflex kick in. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
That's rather harsh. But it was true.
Yes.
Okay, Kenny in Baltimore, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hey, Steph. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Listen, I wanted to know how come Howard Dean is more louder than Tim Kaine, you know?
More louder than, what do you mean?
Because I hear more about Howard Dean, you know, speaking up for the public option, and Tim Kaine is not saying nothing. He's, you know, because I don't want the money from the Democrats going to these guys that are not backing the public option.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting back being quiet. He's not talking about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Dean is more louder than the president where he's standing.
Yep. But that's why this is America. We have a right to speak up.
Yeah. The president needs to have a little more diplomacy.
Yeah.
Than,
right.
A little more decorum.
Right.
Can I have my fine American music? The Politico, though, with an article. Chris, you love this. About the left aiming for critics' jugular. About time.
Yes.
We started
I wish we would have done it a year ago, but whatever.
Well,
we're doing it now.
We're doing the ads. We're fighting back.
Yep.
Liberal allies of President Obama aren't just getting mad about conservative attacks on his agenda. They're getting even in a way calculated to hit conservatives where it counts in their pockets. Dick Armey. You know the...
Penis Air Force.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Formerly known as... the artist formerly known as. Former New York Lieutenant Governor and conservative activist Betsy McCaughey and even Fox News' Glenn Beck have all seen their financial livelihoods threatened by political activists who in several cases managed to make good on their threats. As we all know, Rachel Maddow got Dick Armey fired.
You're fired.
Which made for an awkward meet the press.
Yep.
Hilarious. August was a real wake-up call for progressives when health care reform was endangered by an angry mob organized by an alliance of insurance companies, oil companies, and right-wing fearmongers, said one Democratic activist. I think you're absolutely right, Chris. It's about time we start fighting fire with fire.
Mm-hmm.
But at least, again, you know, we're doing it with the truth. We're not doing it with smears. But I think you're right. It's time. If our Democratic legislators don't have a spine, it's time for, some of us on this side to force them to. 57 minutes after the hour, back with more on that. Tinsel talk and much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Time to feel good because it is Hump Days with Hal. Hal Sparks, comedian extraordinaire, will join us in just a few minutes live in studio. Live tomorrow, don't forget.
Live!
Filmmaker Michael Moore on the big show tomorrow. It's going to be a big, big show. I wouldn't miss a minute of tomorrow's show. Also, maybe a very exciting announcement. That was cryptic. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, me, Stephanie Miller. Like, because someone of the fine Americans did that alerted me to the Huffington Post. There, you know, there's that conservative woman calendar.
Yes. Oh, the one with Phyllis Schlafly and her boobs down to her knees?
Hello,
yes.
Schlafly.
Yes, and Ann Coulter, which of these things is not like the
women?
Other? Cindy in Boston writes, Steph, Huffington Post proposes to put Stephanie on a liberal woman calendar. Oh, isn't that nice? They asked for people to vote on making a liberal women calendar, and I got a lot of votes, I understand.
Would you be nude?
In the nude?
I don't think so.
Why not?
I don't think there's any call for that sort of thing at my age.
Well, at least you're not Phyllis Schlafly's age, and she made it onto a calendar.
Yeah, well, they'll take anybody. All right, let's check some entertainment news, shall we, James? Here we go.
There's no business like show business.
It's time for Tinsel Talk. Let's find out what's going on in Hollywood with Stephanie Miller.
Thank you very much. Our top story. Cheerleaders' religious signs draw fire is the headline. Community members are rallying around the Lakeview Fort Oglethorpe High School cheerleaders after they were banned from displaying signs with Bible verses, urging fans and players to commit to the Lord and take courage and do it, or
whatever.
Take courage and do it?
The banners, they're the ones the football players crash through at the beginning of games. Uh-huh. Yeah. The cheerleaders are not trying to push a religious cause to shove religion down someone's throat, said a local youth minister.
Oh.
No. A Facebook page called We Support the LFL Cheerleaders, Let Them Have Their Signs Back has been established. And for some reason, that guy that banned the sexy teenage cheerleading in Texas.
Representative Squeezy McFeel
Pants.
Yeah,
he's on the case.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, howdy do. Cheerleaders are in the news again. Hallelujah. It seems there has been a bit of a brouhaha over certain activities of the young lovelies. No, it's not what you're thinking. The cheerleaders were apparently displaying religious signs with Bible verses, presumably singing the praises of abstinence, which, as we know, has been so successful in my home state of Texas. I submit that if the nubile young girls with their short skirts, firm thighs, luscious breastuses, and lovely little white cotton panties wish to supplement their lubricious, libidinous aerial gyrations with religious pronouncements, or as local youth minister Brad Scott put it, shoving religion down someone's throat. Oh, my. Hey, now. Interesting choice of words, Brad. And how exactly does Mr. Scott minister to these youth? The mind reels. But I digress. As I was saying, if the girls want to celebrate religion, why not promote the cult of Isis, the goddess of fertility, in whose honor great orgies once took place, bodies writhing in carnal and religious ecstasy, as they did in ancient Egypt before Christianity turned the whore of Babylon into a perpetual virgin, before the joyous sexual celebrations became grim, austere yawn fests in honor of bloodless eunuch ascetics. Did you know that the qualifications for becoming an Egyptian high priestess included having sex with at least 1,000 men? I hope to help the head cheerleader on her way to priesthood by taking the place of the first 200 or so. All hail Isis, Ishtar, Astarte. Also Becky, Jenny, Ashley, Candy, Haley, Caitlin, Jordan, Allison, and Molly.
Hey, I'm just practicing my freedom of religion. Why do you hate America?
That's all for Tinsel Talk. I'm here all week. Tell your friends.
Hey, check out my MySpace page, jim-ward.com. You can see a little skit I put together with a bunch of characters. Including a scene from Biker Mice from Mars, which won me the Emmy.
Wow.
So you can see a picture of me with the Emmy.
So you're the guy still on MySpace.
Yes.
It's hard to keep up with what all the kids are doing.
I know.
All right. I heard someone say Twitter's going to be a passing fad. As the official tweeter of the Stephanie Miller Show, what do you say, Chris LaVoy?
I say I'm riding it as far as I can go. So there. Radio guy. It's twitter.com/radio
140 characters at a time.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Oh, dear God. Whip out the tiny violin. John and Kate plus 8, Jim, will soon be simply Kate plus 8.
All right.
The word from TLC network, they have downsized John from
he's become a douche.
he was always douchetastic, in my opinion.
No, well, no. I mean, during John
F. Kennedy... In my opinion, he is a tub of goo. I don't understand the appeal to the women that he apparently has a lot of.
During John and Kate plus 8, she was always the one being a harpy, just telling him to shut up during the interviews. And, you know, he was just kind of beaten down. And now that he's freed himself from her, he's become the biggest douche in the world.
A bigger asshat.
Yes.
All right, Hugh Jackman, did you see this? Jim, you're a star of stage and screen.
Used to be a thespian before this show.
Wow. Hugh Jackman knows... Wow. Bitter, party one, your table's ready. Hugh Jackman knows how to stop the show. He did it recently when a cell phone call interrupted a preview performance of A Steady Rain, a Broadway play that he is starring in with Daniel Craig.
Are you going to get that? He said.
It's exactly. Yeah. It's that's you know.
Katharine Hepburn would have kicked the guy's head in if she hadn't.
That's true. Had
cell phones in her when she was still treading the boards.
It doesn't belong in the middle of theater. The hell is that?
Are you going to get that?
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore? I have a friend whose cell phone barks. I think people are just trying to decide which is the more annoying cell phone ring. All right.
What was your one line during Streetcar Named Desire?
Oh, I'll do it for you again. Hang on. Blanche, it's time to go. If I had had my one line ruined, I would have gone ape dump on that audience.
Blanche, it's time to...
Damn it!
Who's my one line?
I remember, where's my telling old theater stories music? I remember, Jim. I was in a production of Uncommon Women and Others in college. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's a scene where my character is actually holding a contraceptive device, a diaphragm. And there was a very drunk audience, and one person started chanting, "Put it in!"
What did you do?
They were ejected from the theater.
You had them removed?
Yes, I did. Before I was removed from Broadway because apparently they don't go for booze and dope. Which...
Stephanie Miller.
They drummed you right out of Hollywood. So you come crawling back to Broadway. Well, Broadway doesn't go for booze and dope. Now you get out of my way because I've got a man waiting for me.
Or cell phones, apparently. Yeah.
And here he is, my pal Spark. Hey, I did. Actually, I had a man keeping me waiting because you're late.
Oh, yes. I'm very sorry. It was a lot of traffic and there was so much going on, and I was up late watching Steve Martin last night.
It's Hump Days with Hal, and I had to start without you, but welcome.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time, you know. Happy birthday, by the way. Did you get my birthday message yesterday?
I got a message from Hal Sparks on my cell phone yesterday wishing me happy birthday, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh! You know what Hal did for his birthday?
What?
I saw Kiss in Detroit at Cobo Hall, the last time they were going to play Cobo Hall, on the 35th anniversary of Kiss Alive.
Yeah.
And I went backstage, and I got pictures of the band, and I hung out with Buck Cherry, of all people. You know, the band who does Crazy Biatch and All Lit Up, which, of course, is the I Love That Cocaine, which, of course, means immediately that the lead singer Skypes with his family immediately after the show, which is the truth. That's my favorite part of when you go see a modern rock show is, you know, guys will be dancing like half naked across the stage. You go, oh, yeah, girls and booze, yeah. And then after the show's over, it's like, dude, it's 9:30. I got to be in bed by 9:45. So I'd love to hang with you guys, but I got to eat this alfalfa salad. And then I've got to call my grandmother. And then, let's talk at 5 a.m. because I'll be up jogging.
All right.
It was great.
Hal Sparks, join us for the rest of Celebrity Stack, won't you?
I will.
I'm going to say something shocking now, but I question Britney Spears' parenting skills. I do. I'm going to say it. I'm just going to come right out and say it.
In what way?
Well, she spent $3,000 on candy in one afternoon at the sugar factory in Las Vegas. She visited with her sons, and I...
Looks like K-Fed has been investing in...
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the Peter ex-husband, right? Yeah. What do you think? When do you ever think that anything she buys is actually for her children? If she, I mean, and the truth is, bad parents sometimes make the best kids. You know, some of the greatest cases of all time are of, you know, rotten, horrible parents and kids fighting back. So perhaps we're looking at a Supreme Court Justice Spears, you know, yeah. one generation away.
No, could I have my French music, please? Was Roman Polanski thrown to the lions because of ancient history? That's what France's culture minister says, and many French people agree. France has rushed to the filmmaker's defense since he was arrested this weekend on Switzerland, which, as John Fugelsang said, is not neutral, I guess. Roman
right.
Polanski found out the hard way. They're really not that neutral
the
time.
That's the oldest trick in the book. They'd lure you right in. A lot of people joke about Switzerland, and they're, you know, we have nothing to fear from them. They're silly little knives. But all I say is, if that's what their knives can do, imagine what their tanks look like. I think the Transformers actually come from Switzerland. I think they shoot toothpicks and tweezers, you know, and just like, oh my God, those are corkscrews! His fingers are corkscrews! Giant tanks, like, oh, that's a Bradley fighting vehicle. We have 10 of those, and then it stands up, and you're like, oh my God, the Swiss have finally gotten into the fight!
So what's your take on the Roman Polanski thing? Chris, was it you yesterday? As you know, I'm a kind of a law and order liberal, and I think you, didn't you sort of say, well, you know, she said that she forgave him.
I never said that. No, Roman Polanski needs to do his jail time.
Oh, never mind.
Absolutely.
That was Jim then. Give Jim back the microphone.
Right.
Just broke the microphone. Yeah. Mr. Law and Order just flung the microphone.
Right. she said she forgave him.
She forgave him, and for her, it's over. And
yeah, but that's not the way the legal system works.
Yeah, but still, I think if the victim...
I think, you know, I think it would be ironic if we dragged him all the way back to this country to try that thing, and then we won't go after torture in this country. That's the absurdity, is that in one area, people are like, you know, let it go. And then in other ways, we have to make sure that he does every minute of his jail time. Meanwhile... his victim and he have come to some sort of compromise and reached some sort of, which is the whole point of reconciliation with that kind of thing. You know, I think he should do his jail time, but I do, like, it's odd to me that the right wing especially is coming down hard on, you know, on him and always has.
Well, I think they're both illegal in my case.
Exactly.
My opinion.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And should be treated equally.
But you know what? Way back when it happened, a compromise was reached. He did reach a plea deal, and he was going to serve a little bit of jail time for the seventh. And he skipped.
You're right.
So, you know, a compromise was already reached.
I agree.
And he broke that compromise.
Right.
So I always wanted to know is, what did Jack Nicholson have to say about all this? Didn't he slip her a Mickey, right, and have sex with her at Jack Nicholson's house?
Hey, yes. That's an excellent point.
Yeah. Wind in the hair, lead in the pencil.
Maybe that's where that phrase actually came from.
Boy. She was on my bucket list. What can I say? that was a period, too, with, like, the whole Natalie Wood controversy and stuff. There was a big window where celebrities just went kind of, like, we own the world.
Yeah, king of the world.
Yes.
Speaking of celebrities, here's one that will make you say Andy Williams is still alive.
Right.
Andy Williams, he's a lifelong Republican, apparently, whose hits include Moon River. He has accused President Obama of following Marxist theory and wanting the country to fail.
What a surprise, another 81-year-old duped by Fox News. Like, he is literally, if you look at his statement, it is an exact, like, he's just parroting exact Fox talking points. Like, he does nothing but sit at home, gum peas, and repeat,
Glenn
Beck, yes.
Here's the biggest tragedy of that, is I will never feel the same way about Moon River, which my mother used to sing with my schnauzer, Katie, when I was a child. My mother was her favorite song on the piano.
Really?
Yes. And my miniature schnauzer, Katie.
Your schnauzer could play the piano?
Sang a delightful edition of Moon River.
Oh, yeah.
And now I just don't feel the same about it.
You know what? I'm lucky in that I always grew up with the Fletch reference version of Moon River. Whew. Thank you, Doc. You ever serve time? just breathe easy. Breathe easy. Use no fist, Doc. It doesn't lose anything for me. And what is our big fear? That people will roll through Branson and not get progressive ideas? I mean, that's really... I mean, the guy owns basically a chunk of Branson and, you know...
Yes, exactly.
But oddly, he was friends with Bobby Kennedy.
Thought he would have made a great president.
Yeah, right. Even though he was Republican. I know.
Yeah, which he said after the fact, after he passed away.
All right, 20 minutes after the hour, back with more Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Moon River.
It's coming back for me. 20 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Rock and rolling with Hal Sparks, comedian extraordinaire.
It's true. I always like to rock and roll at night and Stephanie Miller every day.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.
25 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. Judith, you're on with Hal Sparks. Hey, Jude.
Hi there, Stephanie.
Hi.
I'm calling on the Roman Polanski. Anyone that supports his being able to stay in France is supporting the rich that can fly internationally, go into hiding, raise a family, while the poor, most of us, are in a 20-mile radius, and there's not that many hiding places. So it's certainly not social justice to support that man being in his own lifestyle where he wants, no matter how long it's been.
Exactly. Yep. It does create a separate class of people insofar as who can get punished for what. I mean, people have always tried to go on the lam, and it's always been the rich who've been successful at it, you know, and I'm one of those people who believes that Ken Lay isn't dead, so I'm totally with you, is what I mean.
Speaking of people that are rich enough to escape the law, Kyle in Albuquerque says, because we were talking about exactly how much profit insurance companies make. United Healthcare announced a second quarter profit. That's just a second quarter profit of $155 billion.
Right.
Over the second quarter of last year.
Yeah, they are the oil companies of healthcare. They are, you know.
But he points out that's not just a profit of $155 billion, but $155 billion more than they made the same quarter last year. I mean, who really thinks that's...
Well, that conservative caller you had calling, you know, doing the whole who will pay for this and why the public option and stuff, is basically there's this huge movement in the conservative side, which is to take all the bad things of corporations and put them in government and never take any of the good things of government and put them in corporations. It is always a speed towards the most CEO-oriented, top-down mechanic of business on government. What the problem is, government, you can't fire the poor. You can't just get rid of people if, like, unnecessary workforce, like you can in a company. And you have to take care of them. That's what it's in place to do. And they don't seem to care. That's amazing to me. They just don't seem to, like...
Here's what's the cutest thing, is you seem a little shocked by that still.
Well, I am...
Republicans don't seem to be looking out for my best interests.
Right. Or anyone's. Even their own. That's the part that's amazing to me. Is that they're too lazy to be selfish, right? Which is so bizarre.
Well,
contagious disease? Anyone? Nothing?
They are fighting for important things, Hal, like seeing the president's birth certificate.
Sure.
We have a. Have you seen the new ad? The new birther ad? We will play a little bit for you when we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I puked this morning in the car on the way to work. I got really drunk last night.
I was out to a birthday dinner with the guy that owns a show that's trying to kill me for the life insurance money. And he missed again. He kept putting poison pills in my wine, but I drank enough that it just diluted down.
You are the roadrunner to his coyote.
Yes, I am. Comedian Hal Sparks is here. He will be in Chicago, one of our favorite towns, coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I'll be there all weekend, Thursday through Saturday. I'm very excited.
Where?
Very excited. At the Schomburg Improv.
Oh, yeah, cool. Okay. Just,
they call it the Chicago Improv. I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, Schomburg is way...
Schomburg.
Is a little far out there.
Which means I will not only be doing shows that weekend, but I will be doing like tweet-ups in the city because I love me some Chicago.
Oh,
it's a
great city.
Yeah.
Especially this time of year.
Me too.
Oh, my God.
I think we're trying to put together a visit for Mama in, believe it's December, I'm going to say.
Okay.
I thought it was November.
It's moving. It's murky, but I think we're going to get it done.
Oh,
all right.
Okay.
All right.
Well, never go there during the Indian summer with me around because it's far too romantic and I would just scoop you up and... Take you to the Drake Hotel.
Here's another magical story about the power of the Stephanie Miller newscast. Hal Sparks just played in Atlanta, and half the audience was there because of our show.
Yeah.
We're not
true.
Even on in Atlanta.
Right. I know. That was amazing. Huh? Like, half the people were like, I listened to you on Stephanie Miller, that's why I came. And I'm like, what station is it on? It doesn't air here. Oh, well, sure. That makes sense.
Thanks.
Great. I'm being radio stalked by
an
entire
what?
City.
Those fine Americans in Atlanta, Chris, they must get the Stephcast only $4.95 a month if you buy a year in advance.
I think that's smart.
All right. So rumors of the birther movement's demise have been greatly exaggerated. They're back.
Oh, good.
A Christian website called liveprayer.com has pretty. Have you seen the infomercial?
Oh, boy.
No.
It's set to air in seven southern states.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. Welcome. Please pray for the death of the president and anyone who has any kind of, like, that wants women to be anywhere outside the household. Pray for them to get brain cancer and fall down. Pray for them. Like, you've heard
led
about
by
these,
Bill Keller, a born-again Christian once convicted of insider trading on Wall Street.
Sure.
He's working with an attorney named Gary Creep. Which I just love that.
Jesus, what, ran him out of the temple or something, I suppose? That's when he lost his job.
Mm-hmm. Here's what you get. If you donate on liveprayer.com, you get a, they'll get a Got a Birth Certificate bumper sticker, in addition to having a fax bearing their name demanding President Obama produce a birth certificate sent to U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder and 50s state attorneys general.
And they managed to keep their tax-exempt status as a church somehow?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How's that happen? How's that actually work when you're just selling stuff of a political nature that has no religious messaging on it at all?
Rachel Maddow says the infomercial is something one would expect to be produced if the birthers and the creators of Wayne's World had collaborated on an art project. We have clips.
Where was Barack Hussein Obama really born? Was it in Hawaii, as he claims? Or was it in Kenya, as his paternal grandmother claims? Of course, this issue could be resolved very simply by President Obama producing his birth certificate. For some reason, he's refused. Instead, he's posted online a certificate of live birth, which does not in any way prove he was actually born in Hawaii. What is he hiding?
Or born at all. Perhaps he is. Was Barack Obama hatched? We don't know. He's definitely of another world.
Exactly.
A wise black man with intellectual powers beyond my own. That's not natural. He was created in a lab. That's...
Bill Keller on the live prayer.
Where was President Obama born? Why does he refuse to produce his official State of Hawaii birth certificate? What's he hiding? Now your voice can be heard. You can help by going to your phone and calling 1-800-321-3247 to have your name added to a petition going to GOP leaders to force President Obama to obey the law. As a thank you for being part of this petition drive, you will receive the specially created Got a Birth Certificate bumper sticker.
Ooh! How about the Brazilian power crystal?
Yeah.
No?
Right. No.
Call now to get 6 free minutes. And while supplies last, this Brazilian power crystal absolutely free.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And if you have a cross that has, you know, the shredded documents before I was fired from being an inside trader in it. The little, see those little grains inside the cross? Those are actually someone's IRA.
Cal, it's like once a weekend, one of these right-wing whack conventions, whether it's a teabagging or a 9-12 or a last weekend was the How to Take Back America conference run by Phyllis Schlafly, who had this to say, I submit to you the feminist movement is the most dangerous, destructive force in our society today. My analysis is that the gays are about 5% of the attack on marriage in this country. Oh, that would include her son, I guess.
Yes.
Doing. And the feminists are about 95%. I'm talking about drugs, sex, illegitimacy, dropouts, poor grades, runaway suicide, you name it. Every social ill comes out of the fatherless home.
That sounds like a very Christian women original sin kind of thing.
That list of things sounded like a whole bunch of things that Republicans have done.
Absolutely.
And gotten into scandals for.
Well, I mean, you could almost run on them.
Yeah.
Mike Huckabee stood by. She was presented with the American Hero of the Century Award. God bless you, said Huckabee, and God bless Phyllis Schlafly most of all.
Oh, God bless us, everyone. I'm mentally, I'll hobble away with my mental crutches. Huckabee is actually the number one choice from that group, in the conservative voter straw poll to be there 2012. Yeah,
hey,
very
Chris,
exciting.
Speaking of the gay, please take your organ out for me, won't you? In Kalamazoo, Michigan, where an anti-discrimination ordinance, I know you've been working against Prop 8 out here, Hal.
It's true.
Based on sexual orientation, will go before voters in November. 800 people packed the Radisson Plaza Hotel for a forum with 6 local pastors about the Bible and homosexuality. A panel of 6 area pastors, 3 who believe same-sex relationships violate biblical teaching and 3 who say Scripture does not support that conclusion.
Huh. Wow.
Good for them. They spent 2 hours giving their perspectives and answering questions. The Reverend Matthew Laney, who is saving America today, said scriptural debate on homosexuality focuses primarily on 7 passages of the Bible's 31,000. He said it's only 0.002% of the entire Bible, an incredibly small slice. Sexual orientation is not a choice. It's not a disorder. It is part of God's diverse creation.
Mm-hmm.
Go, Reverend. It's your birthday. The Reverend Dr. Douglas Vernon said the Bible should be taken very seriously, but not always literally. We believe there is no one right way to interpret Scripture. Well, especially,
Well, especially when a lot of books were taken out, that percentage would be a lot smaller if all the books that were in the Bible, you know, just were read end-to-end in the order they were basically found, which they weren't. They were reshuffled around to make Revelations the end and you know, kind of abstractly put things in, sort of, create sort of a dramatic narrative, you know, that doesn't really exist. And for the record, that whole thing about original sin, this has always been a chip on my shoulder. The whole thing is that, you know, Adam and Eve committed original sin. Women, of course, did it worse because they did it by, whereas men just went, oh, you'll eat that, you ate that, I'll eat that. That's fine. Yeah. Which is we were originally dumb then. I don't know how that worked. but didn't God wipe out all the evil on the earth with the exception of Noah during the great worldwide flood? And therefore, we're the children of Noah, not particularly Adam and Eve. So aren't we... forget, like, isn't that supposed to be wiped? What didn't I think of that? Remember, I refer to, by the way, the Great Worldwide Flood as when God tried to drown sharks, but
I think you found a blooper in the Bible.
I did. I found a lot of bloopers in the Bible. There's a lot of good
Bible's
ones.
Funniest bloopers. Posted by Hal Smart.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, speaking shrimp eater, you're going to hell. What? Yeah. Are you wearing
speaking
a polycom?
Comedy.
Sorry, I'm sorry. I'll go on that forever.
Can I have my comedy music, please? Raw story with one of the funniest court cases recently. I don't know if you heard about this, how a Pennsylvania judge pondered a very unusual question during a ruling issued Monday when a former police officer stuck his in the mouths of five baby cows. Did they enjoy suckling it, or were they merely puzzled? During a bizarre hearing here yesterday, a Superior Court judge dismissed animal cruelty charges against a Morristown police officer.
Well, cruelty, I mean, that's a... That's
claiming
a big word.
A grand jury couldn't infer whether the cows had been tormented or puzzled by the situation or even irritated that they'd been duped out of a meal.
Well, 4 out of 5 of them were.
Judge James Morley reportedly asked, if the cow had the cognitive ability to form thought and speak, would it say, where's the milk? I'm not getting any milk.
He did not really say that.
Yeah, he did.
In court?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Children enjoy the act of suckling.
Where's
cows
the milk?
May be of a different disposition.
I grew up in Kentucky, so I can't comment on
that. Did they like it? Were they asking for it?
Yeah,
that's what the judge is asking.
We, on our way to church one day, drove past a guy in our town who was known to be slightly mentally deficient, standing on a crate behind a rather large animal. And my mom went, keep your head in the car. And I was leaning out the window going, ah!
Of course, you being the smart ass.
Right. Yeah. I was like 8. But I was like, and I wouldn't shut up about it at church during the whole thing.
No, oh boy.
Because it was just over the hill. Anyways.
Right.
So I can't throw stones is what I'm saying.
Oh, boy. Hal Sparks grew up in Kentucky, y'all. 42 minutes after the hour.
Where's the milk?
Got milk?
Moo. Like, moo. Oh, where's the milk?
All right.
You brought it up.
I'm the adult in charge now?
Yeah,
oh,
how did that happen?
Rude. 43 minutes after the hour, the Stephanie Miller Show.
Remember, you heard it on this channel first.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is Hump Days with Hal.
Yeah. That's not all I want to do, but it's a good portion of it.
47 minutes after the hour.
Zoom, 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 bada, boom, boom.
Stephanie, I've never seen you turn so many shades of red. Seriously.
He said I looked like a startled doe earlier. Like,
yeah,
I have fear in my eyes when Hal Sparks comes in. I look like
true.
Clarice on
exactly.
the Christmas special.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Oh, I see. I was like, Clarice Starling from Silence of the Lambs.
No,
was there a Silence of the Lambs Christmas special? Did I miss
different.
That? I'm sorry.
Okay. by the way, Michael Moore, filmmaker extraordinaire, will join us tomorrow. You saw his new film, Capitalism, A Love Story.
I was at the screening here in Los Angeles and met the man and talked afterwards. There's actually an interview on YouTube of me outside the place, which was...
Uh-oh.
I kind of cut loose a little bit because it was a web series that I was being interviewed for, so my language is a bit over the top.
It's
a
bit saltier.
Yes. but it was great talking to him, and it was a great... It's a great movie and a necessary movie. I think it's the most difficult one he's had to make because the villain in it is so abstract. contract. It is a right. system of economics. Mm-hmm. And his thing is, you know,
I love the scene I've seen with him with the giant money bags outside Goldman Sachs.
I'd like to have the money
we
back.
Want them. We would like the money back.
Yeah,
he the actually, American people just drop it out the window.
He actually wraps the building in crime scene tape.
he's a scamp.
Yeah, it's great stuff, and it's very enlightening for a lot. It will be for a lot of people. A lot of us already know because we're, you know, if you keep up on these things.
Yes.
But it's a nice concise way of putting it together. You know,
good. So, well, we will talk to him more about all that and yeah. Healthcare. Oh, speaking of which, we got a hate letter from. Well, it's not so much a hate letter.
Oh,
Michael writes. Good morning.
Oh.
Your show berates the Republicans in nearly every turn.
Yes.
Right.
Does your staff, that's you.
Me?
Mm-hmm. Ever research for the reasons which have caused the failures in healthcare? Yes, Republicans. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. That requires more work than criticizing said Republicans. Healthcare policy reform dates back to FDR. Yes.
We've been saying that for a year now.
Yes, and it's been Republicans have been blocking it, including the creation of Medicare.
Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, that research is actually the easiest kind to do.
And Michael, like many Republicans today, may I just say, in fact.
You are an idiot.
Yeah, Republicans also fighting it from the other end, in that they're the ones who first pushed to get physical education dropped out of school programs mm-hmm. and taken off of the budgets. They fight against school nutrition programs. They're the first ones in their districts to make sure you can have Coke machines in schools. So on both ends, they're getting you in bad health care policy and bad health care mm-hmm. ideas. So
there are some good Republicans. This is an unfortunate headline, though, Chris.
Oh?
Chris to Obama. It's getting harder every day.
Charlie mm-hmm. Crist to Obama. Yeah. No, okay. Sound like you said Chris to Obama.
No, Crist.
Okay.
No. You didn't say that.
I know.
What?
Charlie Crist.
Yeah.
The exceedingly neat and tan formerly bachelor governor.
Don't speak code.
Florida's Republican governor Charlie Crist appeared with President Obama to urge passage of the president's package, the stimulus. Our budget is in balance here in Florida. He said, in fact, we've had to cut about $7 billion over the past 2 years. We haven't raised taxes. We're still in balance. But to be candid, it's getting harder every day. That's what he meant.
It's getting, okay.
Passage of the stimulus was important, Chris said, in order to help support education, infrastructure, and health care in his state. This is not about partisan politics. It's about rising above that, helping America, and reigniting our economy.
That's of the, you know, the five on the Senate Finance Committee who are blocking, of the Dems who are blocking health care reform and specifically the public option.
Mm-hmm.
Florida's the biggest, most populous state at about 15 million people, which is half of that of California, which means two-thirds of the people, or one-third of the people get to direct the other two-thirds, really kind of irritating. But the other states combined, less than, I think, the population of Pasadena. Yep. Arkansas, North Dakota, where are they off of Delaware. All the blue dogs seem to come from these states with, you know, just over less than a million people in them.
Mm-hmm,
And they have two senators who can bulldoze stuff through. And that's the you know, it's like the health department, like insurance companies are like a cancer. They go where the weak spot is.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
In a healthy body, they'll just go where the weakness is. If you have a natural weakness in your knees or your breasts or your prostate or your brain, that's where
you have a natural weakness for my breasts.
Mm-hmm.
What? Who doesn't? What breasts?
Yeah.
Oh,
hey,
shut
watch
up.
It. I believe the French are right. They were wrong about Roman Polanski, but they're right about Stephanie's breasts.
Built like a surfboard,
She's
Stephanie.
Not. That's not true at all.
No,
and if that was true, I'd want to wax her down every morning. just get out one of those little things and just yippity. I just want to attack you like a great white shark that thinks he sees a seal.
He would sex wax me every day.
I would.
All right.
You ever seen those jumping shark footage or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I would do to Stephanie if she was swimming in the ocean above me. That's true. There you go.
Okay.
Is that clear enough?
All right. You'd think that the Republicans could at least get behind bringing the Olympics to America. Couldn't you? Wouldn't you think this would be a good thing?
But that brings Ferners here. That it's going to bring more Ferners. Illegal immigrants. People that come here and take our snowboarding jobs.
You're going to Chicago this weekend.
Yeah.
What? Why? So, it's, of course, drawn criticism from Republicans, including Michael Steele. Where's the focus? Like, the president can't possibly take a plane ride. And also, Robert Gibbs laughed when told of Steele's criticism. He said, who's he rooting for? Is he hoping to hop a plane to Brazil and catch the Olympics in Rio?
Hang on. This drives me nuts. So they're mad that Obama's going to make a specific pitch to get the Olympics here. They were fine with Bush going to bed at 9 o'clock every night, regardless of the terror threat, regardless of our enemies, regardless of the fact we were in two wars. It's fine that he just kind of, you know, get me some cookies and milk, you know, and went to bed. Like, his biggest distraction was football games on the weekend where he nearly choked on a pretzel.
Mm-hmm.
Reed started drinking again.
Yes.
And goes to bed at night like he's you guys, actually. Yeah. Like you guys get up at 5, you know.
Get up at 3, thank you.
The director of the Center for International Sports Business made a good point. He said, for the president not to attend would send a signal that it would be not be helpful to Chicago's bid. Almost certainly it would result in Chicago not having a chance. He said if Chicago was not selected, Republicans would have been crabbing that he didn't do enough,
exactly.
Which is absolutely true.
Right.
John Feary, Republican strategist, said he's taking a bunch of Chicago cronies on an all-expense-paid trip to Copenhagen for one reason, to get the Olympics. For me, it seems it makes him seem unserious and look slightly desperate.
Desperate? Yeah.
We're trying to... What's his name? Prime Minister Tony Blair was the first president or, you know, head of state that did personal lobbying, and mm-hmm. his country got, obviously, the 2000...
Right,
exactly. Yes. It works. And economically, in these times, any major city that, you know, can benefit from the amount of money that's brought in by the Olympics is a big plus.
And you know who I think may really bring it home? Michelle Obama. She said she vowed to take no prisoners in their launch, in their bid to get Chicago for the 2016 Olympic bid. It's a battle we're going to win. Take no prisoners, she said with a smile.
Mm-hmm.
She, at last week's G20, she sat next to the First Lady of Brazil, one of the nations with a rival bid. She said, I adore her, but I said, you know, I'm going to hug you now, but then I'm going after you in Copenhagen.
That's right.
I will take you down, my friend. And she said, you too, so the gloves are off.
Wow.
I'm betting on Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
It ain't a man's world.
Mrs. Obama said she and Joe Biden have been lobbying IOC members by telephone. I'm guessing that anything to get Joe Biden off the phone, to get him to stop talking, would be
right.
They would look favorably upon.
Well, I just think, you know, this is, I'm glad the Republicans are coming out against him going for this, because it just makes it much more starkly obvious that all they care about is opposing anything that he does.
Oh, I know.
It has nothing to do with the content of it all.
You're like, wouldn't that be a proud moment for America?
And that's how they govern. That's how they govern. They don't govern based on content. They govern based on the face value and the sales aspect of it. They sell policy. They don't produce policy.
Jonathan in Hadley, Massachusetts, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show with Hal. Hello.
Hi, Stephanie. I just wanted to say that, you know, I think I heard a comment earlier that that Howard Dean can say things that President Obama can't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I would like to say is that President Obama should get off the fence that he's sitting on before he gets dragged off and represent the progressives that put him in office.
Yep. Well, I mean, look, that's our job as Americans. We can, you know, we're allowed to hold his feet to the fire along with these moderate Democrats that are standing in the way of the health care that literally 70% of the American people are for.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, you know, that fence sitting has been one of, you know, is the big argument. Is it a game? Is it a chess aspect in that he's trying to get this bill out of committee? As unharmed as possible, so that the House bill, which has, you know, a solid public option in it, can be mixed with the bills and actually put through one that they can get through with reconciliation or, you know, digitization.
Hey, y'all, Hal Sparks in Chicago this weekend.
Absolutely.
All right, that's it for us today. I'd like to thank Chris LaVoy, Jim Ward, and Miranda in for Rebecca Baker. See you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.